أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله الذي ليس لأوليته ابتداء ولا لأزليته انقضاء، وانحسرت الأوصاف عن كنه معرفته، ورضعت عظمته الأقول، والذي لا تواري عنه سماء سماء ولا أرض أرضا. ثم الصلاة والسلام والتحية والإكرام على سيد الفتحاء سيد المرسلين والأنبياء أبي القاسم محمد المصطفى. وعلى الجوهرة القدسية البتول العذراء سيدة النساء فاطمة الزهراء، وعلى بعدها أمير المؤمنين وبنيها الذين أذهب الله عنهم الرجس وطهرهم تطهيرا. لا سيما على بقية الله وحجته الكبرى الذي بيمنه رزق الورى وبوجوده ثبتت الأرض والسماء، ولولاه لساخت الأرض بأهلها، واللعنة الدائمة على أعدائهم أجمعين من حين عداوتهم إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال أمير المؤمنين عليه الصلاة والسلام: لا يحتمل الظلم إلا الذليل. صلوات. إمام أمير المؤمنين علي ابن أبي طالب عليه السلام has said in this hadith that no one can tolerate the zulm except the zaleel. So it takes the izzat of the person away. It takes the sharaf izzat of a person away from him to not object on the zulm, not to stand in the way of the zulm, not to oppose the zulm, and to accept, accommodate, and tolerate. Alhamdulillah, we thank Allah, our Creator, the only Almighty God, to bless us with His glorious values and teachings, to bless us through the prophets that He has sent for our guidance: Prophet Adam, Prophet Abraham, Prophet Ishaq, Prophet Ismail, Prophet Nuh, Prophet Musa, Prophet Isa, and Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. And all the rest of the prophets of God, their deputies, their imams, their successors, and all the pious personalities and salihin and siddiqin, the truth-telling people of the past and the present, who have been standing on the path of haq, righteousness, and had been resilient on the divine values. Recently in our contemporary history, Ayatullah al-Uzma Imam al-Khumayni Ridwanullahi alayh was the leader who provided us the political awareness in our times, revived the Islamic values amongst us, and revived the human values. Actually, it's about humanity. It's about our conscience. There are so many people who are not Muslims. There are so many people who do not belong to the religion Islam, but they have their humanity, they have their conscience, they have their courage to say the haq and truth, to stand for haq and truth, and to take a stance based on haq and truth. He announced the Yawm al-Quds as the last Friday of the month of Ramadan, and that personifies our responsibility not only as believers, not only as Muslims, but as human beings of conscience. Regardless of our faith, any human being and every human being who has his conscience alive, to take a stand on the moral values and the killing of the moral values, against the killing of the moral values which is taking place day in and day out on the holy land by the Zionists who actually belong to no religion. And they are enemies of Allah. They have their own way of life which has nothing to do with any of the divine teachings. Their belief is zulm and oppression, and their practice is anything that comes in the way of their worldly material pleasures, interests, for the sake of their global, political, social, economical, and any other form of dominance on the planet. People, men and women of conscience all over the world, gather in various cities throughout the world on the last Friday to show their support towards the oppressed people. And that's what Imam Khomeini used to say, you know, we are the supporters. Ma hamiye hamiye mustazafane jahaneen. That was his famous statement. We are the supporters of all the weakened masses in the world. So it doesn't matter if a person is a Jew, a person is a Christian, a person is a Muslim. It doesn't matter. A person is a Buddhist. If he is oppressed, our Islamic value system asks us to stand next to the oppressed person and oppose the oppressor. This is our conscience, this is our religion asking us to do. And tonight again, we are honored to have our honorable guest, Rabbi Yisrael Weiss. Is no stranger to you, mashallah, because he has visited our community, you know, two times earlier. We are very much honored to have him again, and this year as well. And he has a lot of engagements. He has a lot of travels. He is a frequent traveler. So many communities and so many countries are basically going after his invitations, asking him to visit them, deliver his presentation, and make his point. He was about to travel to Gaza today, this Yawm al-Quds, for another help convoy to support the innocent civilians of that area, but it didn't work out. That's the will of Allah. So Allah has his own plans. So alhamdulillah, we are pleased to have him again here amongst us. And he's going to deliver his speech today on the Yawm al-Quds. And also after the speech, there will be the Q&A session. You can ask any question that you want from the honorable guest. Also on this coming Sunday, after the sundown, the Maghrib Salat, we have his second speech on this coming Sunday, inshallah. So please be there and benefit from his presence. So please welcome Honorable Rabbi Weiss with a loud salawat. Sundown towards the Sabbath already started, so electronic things cannot be used, so you can hopefully listen to his speech. If you cannot, you can please, the sisters can move a little bit forward so you can hear him. Thank you.
to the Almighty to bestow upon me His truth, His wisdom, that I may be worthy of conveying His message, His truth. In so doing, one of God's attributes is shalom, salom, peace, and God is righteous, just. We hope by being knowledgeable in God's justice, the Almighty's justice and righteousness, that we should be able to bring justice, righteousness, and peace to this world, and to be sanctified God's name. Assalamu alaikum, assalamu alaikum to all of you. First, it's an honor, I'm humbled, it's a privilege for us to know Imam, and to be invited by Imam to this special moment. Actually, in South Africa, I was just there, they also refer to you. And to behold the center here, and the organizers, what? The center, and all the organizing people for giving me this really privilege of being here. And to all of you for coming to listen. It's really, everybody is extremely busy, everybody has responsibilities, and to take time to listen, especially to listen to somebody from a different culture, from a different religion, and unfortunately, especially in today's time, where the world has driven, certain people of the world have driven a rift between the Jewish people and the Muslim people, and to give time to listen to somebody from the Jewish religion is really something which is honorable, and I thank you all. But with God's help, with the help of the Almighty, it'll be worthy that this issue, because we have to serve the Almighty and do His requirements, and His requirements, as the Imam said, we have to constantly stand up for the ones who are downtrodden, for the ones who are being oppressed. We have to emulate God. In the Hebrew, in our teaching, Jewish teaching, we say, Mahu rachum akatei rachum. Just as God is compassionate, you must be compassionate. And what is happening, unfortunately, is the opposite. It's in compassion, and a terrible injustice, oppression of the people. So with God, and it seems sometimes frustrating and futile, it seems that all the people try to do, day in and day out, week in and week out, in the United Nations, they make all these different, whatever they call it, statements and all what they do, and the countries make statements, say, do, and nothing happens. The world continues on, and on the contrary, I think that you find that more people in Palestine are being oppressed, and terrible, terrible atrocities are happening there, as we've seen in Gaza. So there's a reason. Of course, the reason ultimately lies, we say, it's the works of the Shatan. We say Satan. In Hebrew, we say Satan. Who's behind this? Because it doesn't really make any, it's not logical at all why the Zionist state should be so successful. It's something that defies logic. Something that's really against human, what people call humanity. We call it godliness. What is happening to the Palestinian people. From day one, it defies logic, it defies what people would call humanity, what people would say is justice. And yet it exists, it's flourishing, the state of Israel and Zionism, and everything that has been done till today, nothing seems to make it in any manner diminish. And the reason is, of course, like I say, because God, in His ultimate wisdom, gives the Shatan, the ability to carry out certain things, a test for humankind, a test for humanity. But in the logical, in every time when something happens, God dresses it in what people would call nature. I'm not very happy with the word nature, because many people who, we say, afikarsim, heretics, who don't like to think of God doing the word, they use the word nature, mother nature, things like that. Because they feel very uncomfortable saying that it's the Almighty who's ruling the world. But God makes things happen. For instance, if it is a decree, God decrees that somebody has to die, or he did something, God forbid, or whatever. So what happens is, he'll go into the street, and he'll try to cross the street, and he'll forget to look, and a car will run him over. Now, does that mean that because he was stupid, he did a foolish thing, he went out and he crossed the street? There was a reason why he forgot to look. Everything that happens, there's a reason behind it. There's an Almighty that rules this world. In this injustice that's happening to the Palestinians, the truth is, it's the works of Satan. But what is the logical reason why they seem to be so successful? And I think it's very obvious from day one, it's because the Zionists dress this beast, this aberration, this rebellion against God called the State of Israel, they dress it in religion, in an aura of spirituality and holiness. They use the Star of David, they use the name of Israel, Israel is Yaakov, Jacob in the Torah. They use all the connotations as if they represent godliness. And that is how they give this legitimacy of a portrayal of legitimacy, and why the world doesn't feel uncomfortable supporting them. And in fact, people not only don't feel uncomfortable supporting them, but they feel they're doing for a just cause by supporting the State of Israel. Of course, there's many other reasons, and many people have different reasons. There could be, you know, personal, or there's the arms lobby, there's the oil lobby, and there's many other reasons that people do it, you know, injustice and things like that. But as a whole, people have good hearts around the world, people in the United States, and they're out for justice. And when they see, for instance, that there was some killings in a country just recently, in a few whatever things, in Haiti, things happened, or this in any country, right away they're upset that if the people didn't respond immediately. So you see that people are upset when they see injustice or something bad happening to a community that's totally estranged, very far from them. And yet when it comes to the issue of Palestine, when it comes to the issue of the people of Gaza, you don't see that people are standing up and screaming for the injustice, for the terrible atrocity that just happened almost 2 years or something in Gaza. People were murdered, there were just bombs raining down on them for a long period of time. There were thousands of people killed, and really, there was probably, I can't figure out the number, but who knows how many millions of people were touched by the terrible atrocity that just happened in Gaza. Because every person knows this. If you, God forbid, have a person who walks into this center and they have to be wheeled in a wheelchair, your heart gives a shake. It hurts. It hurts when you see this. You see somebody who is incapacitated mentally or something, and it hurts. It always hurts when you see something like that. I'm talking about normal human beings. It always hurts when you see people suffering. And how much compounded is it if it's a neighbor, if it's a friend? And how much more compounded is that feelings of sorrow if it happens to be a relative, God forbid, and a close relative? How many people were injured besides the dead, wasn't it 5,000 dead around that died? And how many people were injured? And when they say injured, it doesn't mean a scratch. A scratch doesn't get reckoned. It means a real injury. How many people are maimed for life, and wherever they walk around, even missing a finger? How uncomfortable is it when they go amongst people, and people stare at them, and you can go on and on, the relatives see this constantly, and that's just a minor injury. Mentally, how many people were maimed for life? Children grow up, they lost their parents, they lost their relatives, and they're destroyed for their whole life, and so on and on and on. This is just one happening, one link in a chain of atrocities, of injustice that has emanated from the existence of the state of Israel from Zionism. Zionism is the ideology behind the state of Israel. So, and yet the world doesn't seem to notice this. The reason? Because they say, look, the people of Gaza, they just happen to be, they brought it upon themselves. They're very stubborn. The Israelis say there's thousands and thousands of missiles, and they'll show you on videos or whatever, there's thousands and thousands of missiles are being rained upon them. That's all because the people of Gaza, they hate the Jewish people. They want to destroy all the Jews. All they have to do is say that they're willing that the Jewish people should have their home. They're willing to say that they accept the Jewish people. And there would be peace. So who's responsible? The people of Gaza. They brought upon themselves. Yeah, it hurts when you see children maimed and injured and so many people suffering. But what could we do if they keep on bringing it upon themselves? This is, I think, around the world, in America, you will hear this constantly, that's the problem. The problem is Gaza. The problem is they are the villains, and the victims is Zionism, the state of Israel. And this is the works of Satan. We say in Jewish teachings that God created the Satan, and he's doing the will of God. Why will he be punished? Our great rabbis teach us. He says he's punished because he colors things. If he would just say to a person, sin, and the person would listen to him, then he's doing his duty. But what he does is, he constantly confuses, he changes things, he makes things look as a good deed when you're doing something bad, and when you're doing something good, he convinces the person not to do it, that it's a bad deed, and he totally confuses people, and for that he'll be punished. The world looks as the people of Gaza as villains, and the people of, and not only Gaza, Palestine, I'm giving an example, a fresh example of what happened now. The people, today it's Gaza, and the other Palestinian Authority maybe is okay, we can get into that, whatever, but as a whole, this is the vilify totally the people of Gaza. And in this manner, they make this issue as if this would be a religious conflict, and the people of Gaza, the people, the Palestinian people, they refuse to accept Jewish people. That is what the works of Satan, because this is a terrible injustice. This is a crime in and of itself. Why? Because the Muslim people, the Arab people, have been, prior to the state of Israel, and prior to Zionism, which is, let's say, another 50 years before 1948, a little more than that, before Zionism came about, the Jewish people were living amongst the Muslim people. They were living both in Palestine and in Iran, in Iraq, in Tunisia, Yemen, Egypt, and you can still go and see these religious synagogues where they practiced the religion, where they flourished. They dressed as Jews, so it wasn't that people didn't know they were Jewish. So if it would be that the people of Gaza, the Palestinian people, or Muslim people at large hate the Jews, how come prior to any human rights groups or the United Nations, Jews lived together with Muslim people? What changed? Why all of a sudden do they hate the Jewish people? And the answer is, it's not true. It's just a farce. It's a ploy of what the Zionism is doing. It's a facade. There's a Madoff, fooled people. He fooled rich, smart people. Billions and billions of dollars. And he carried this on for years and years and years. People who are brilliant, people who he respected because they're such good businessmen that they became rich, that they could invest millions of dollars. They were jaded people who were not fooled easily. And yet, they were being fooled constantly. This Zionism, if you would just scratch the surface, you do a little homework, you will see that the whole thing is built on a lie, on a falsehood, on hypocrisy, and more than that, on a rebellion against God. It's built on the evil, on a rebellion against God. The first example that I've showed you is a very simple, logical thing that you could ask anybody, how come the Jews flourished as religious communities amongst the Muslims? If they really truly hate Jews, why did they live together with them and they were not massacred for hundreds and hundreds of years? So you see, see something is wrong. Now, usually, science says that they would like to, it has to be scientifically proven, it has to make sense. A lot of that is, the belief in God and everything makes sense and so forth. But when they come with this, that they want a hard proof, and then a hard proof they'll be convinced, this you can prove even to these people who are trying to avoid religion and things, but you can ask them, look at this. I give sometimes an example. If somebody comes along and goes to a doctor, and he says to the doctor, he's wheezing and sneezing and just he can't breathe. And he says, and I'm pretty convinced that it's because of my neighbor who grows roses in his gardens. I must be allergic to it, to these roses, and we have to have this guy stop planting roses in the garden. And he just barely can breathe. But the doctor notices that he smells terribly from cigarette smoke. So he asks him, let's understand that you're convinced that your neighbor is doing a harm to you, that he's, let me ask you, how long has he had this rose garden that you're complaining? He said, oh, this rose garden, he has it already 10 years, and you see what I look like. I'm who knows how long he's going to live, he says. So he said, oh, that's nice. How long are you sleeping? He's wheezing and doing, so he said like around 3 years. So he said, and is there anything else? How long have you smoked with cigarettes? He said around 4 years he started smoking cigarettes. So let's go through this again. 10 years, your neighbor has plenty of roses. Yeah, no, you were wheezing. Everything was okay for 5 years, went past nothing. And now you cough, you look terrible. And you say that you started coughing and sneezing and wheezing around a year after you started smoking cigarettes. So maybe it's the cigarette smoke. So he says, doctor, you're a smart aleck. I'm coming to you. You know people are allergic to roses. Who do you think you are to tell me? I'm smart. I know who I am. And I'm telling you I'm allergic to those roses. I want you to help me get rid of this guy's rose garden. The doctor, what can he do with a guy like this? He's defying logic. Jewish people have been living together with Muslims. That's a fact. We've been living together, and thank God Jewish community is grew. We have great rabbis. And you can see they wrote their literature and so forth. In Baghdad and in this country and that and Alexandria and in all these countries. And in Palestine, I have many colleagues. I brought a colleague here last time, I think it was last time, who was six generations from Palestine. They lived together in the same courtyard. They made this answer. No problem. And all of a sudden, around 100 years ago, a movement started called Zionism that they wanted to take over the land, to make so-called a Jewish state, to make a nationalism in Palestine. And since then, there was like a hammer, a rift was driven between the Jews and the Muslims. And since then, there's an endless river of bloodshed. Now, so what is it? The religion? I think that the same Islamic religion was practiced 200 years ago and 300 years ago and yesterday and today. One thing I can tell you, the Jewish religion, by the ones who are practicing the religion, it's the same that we practice, and we're very strict not to change one iota, one drop of the teaching. We are very strict in that. So it's the same Jewish religion. So the religions are the same. So why, all of a sudden, can't we coexist? So the answer is, let's look. Let's look what came into being. What was introduced to this mixture that could be causing this problem? And it's something that's very obvious. Zionism came into the picture, and all of a sudden, it's like you add some type of you put Alka-Seltzer in a glass and it's like bubbling. What do you have here? Something was added that it's disrupting the existence. So you may say, well, it has to exist. What do you mean? You're going to wipe out this, you know, this the great, the people of Jews and Muslims. They have to live together. You have to, you're not going to ask people to wipe out Judaism. Who's asking you to wipe out Judaism? This Jewish religion that coexisted next to Islamic religion that we were coexisting, there's no problem, we could continue living together. When you say you have interfaith, doesn't mean making compromises. Interfaith, we're not asking you to change, we're not being asked to change. If we're being asked to change, that's a false. When people, the rabbis, sometimes so-called rabbis, who get together in interfaith and say, well, we'll make compromises, we'll make a mixed match, that's not what it means. It means that we can exist practicing our religion, we can live in peace, door by door, and helping each other. We have been doing this. We have, so nobody's asking that you should wipe out the Islamic people there, or they should practicing, that we're asking them to stop practicing what they're practicing, or they're asking me to stop practicing what I'm practicing. We're just saying, take away this foreign object, which is, people know, you take, again, I'll use a medical example. If you put in a foreign object in the body right away starts rejecting it. You have something foreign to these people that were coexisting. And it's a nationalism, it's a purely political issue, Zionism. And America, the United States, and many others, they insist you have to let this exist. And it's costing lives and more lives and destroying millions of people. And they insist, no, but you can't take it away. Why? Is it something that was from the time of Abraham? It's a little more than 100 years old. It's a movement that was started by a few people. They decided to come along with the political movement. So why do you insist that it has to keep on going? Take this away, and we'll return to what we had originally. Three people living together, Christians, Muslims, and Jews, and we were able to coexist without any problem. Doesn't that make sense? But people don't seem to comprehend this. It's the works of Satan. And if you think that there's any non-truth to this, we have, first of all, we have the writing, which I, today in the demonstration, we have many writings. It's called The Rabbis Speak Out. It's 130 years of religious Jewish opposition to Zionism. It's just a compilation of a few comments of the leading rabbis, not all the rabbis, just the leading rabbis that the world recognizes as the leading rabbis. And nobody refutes. Anybody who knows Judaism knows that these were the leaders of the Jewish people. And I'll just mention one. His name was Rabbi Yisrael Meir Cohen. He lived from 1839 to 1933. 1933 was before there was a state of Israel, but Zionism was flourishing. And he wrote just one of the many comments that he said, Zionists are dead limbs of our people which cause the entire body to rot. And I could go through many, many sharp statements and all that, this is on and on. This is what they held. They looked at Zionism as a cancer, a tumor to the Jewish people. The chief rabbi of Palestine in 1947, that was right before the creation of the state of Israel, he pleaded with the United Nations. He was the chief rabbi of this community that was living for hundreds and hundreds of years in Palestine. And all of a sudden, you know that what happened was it was under the Turkish rule till by its First World War. Afterwards it was under British mandate. Mandate meaning that they're going to give it over eventually to the indigenous people. They promised they would give it to the Jews, I think, to the Zionists, they promised they'd give it to the Zionists, sort of, and to the Arabs, they promised they'll give it to them. And of course, Zionists were living in Britain. Chaim Weizmann, who was the first president of the State of Israel, was living in England. He was very well connected with the British leadership. He was the first president of the State of Israel, and he was pivotal in getting both the white papers, the paper, the Balfour Declaration that they should promise for the Zionism state, for the Jewish state. But the Jewish community that was living in Palestine was almost entirely a religious community, a Jewish religious community. They were God-fearing. This was the elite of Jewish people. The Jews around the world always looked at the Holy Land as a holy land. And they would go up there, rabbis, they would retire, they would take a few students. People went to live in Palestine, in the Holy Land, not to become rich. It was a desolate, it was a very poor land. People went there to live off their lives in holiness. So it became the elite of Jewish society from around the world. And it was a very God-fearing community. We have many writings like that. There's a German general by World War I wrote a book, and it was, and I just happened to notice it was in Haaretz magazine, which is enough of a problem. It's a Zionist, it's a from the State of Israel, the leftist paper, non-religious, and they brought a book review from this German general. And in this book review, he writes, it's called, the name of the book is Mit den Türken zum Suez Canal. That means with the Turks to the Suez Canal, by Friedrich Kress von Kressenstein. And it was a book reviewed in the archives. And he writes like this. This general from World War I, a German, and he had no connections or no interest at all in the Jewish issue. He was just a German general, and he wrote about the maneuvers, the war maneuvers of World War I. And afterwards he wrote a book, and he's So it says, they wrote in the book review, it is interesting to see how Palestine of 90 years ago appeared to Kress, this German general. A phenomenon that was extremely odd was how the war caused, the First World War, caused an unprecedented upsurge in the battle between the Zionists and the non-Zionists. A battle that turned ugly and did little to promote Jewish interests in general. At the same time, the non-Zionists, that is the Jews, without political goals, mainly belonging to the Orthodox stream, that means the religious Jews, were the overwhelming majority in Palestine of Jews. Not because of the majority of people living here were Muslim, but of the Jews, they were the Orthodox, God-fearing Jews were the overwhelming. The Zionists living in Palestine scarcely made up 5% of the population. But they were very active, fanatical, and terrorized the non-Zionists. During the war, the First World War, the latter tried to free themselves from this terror with the help of the Turks. They feared, justifiably, that the activities of the Zionists would ruin the good relations that existed between the long-time Jewish inhabitants of Palestine and the Arabs. And so on, he goes to speak. The Jews who were living there as a whole, the community, were God-fearing Jews. There was no such thing as desecrating the Sabbath. You didn't do it. I know for a fact, there's many writings of the rabbis, nobody dared to publicly not keep the Sabbath or do something against God. The chief rabbi at the time, who represented all the Jews then, basically the Jewish communities, was Rabbi Sonnenfeld. After he passed away, there was Rabbi Dushinsky. Rabbi Dushinsky was right before the creation of the state, before the United Nations ratified the state. And he wrote a letter to the United Nations. He said, I plead with you. And we have the letter. It was in July 16, 1947, the declaration before the United Nations. And I'm not going to read the whole letter, but just one sentence. He said, we furthermore wish to express our definite opposition to a Jewish state in any part of Palestine. This was a man with a beard, a God-fearing man. You think of this, he's the most Jewish you can be. And he says, I don't want a Jewish state in Palestine. This was the view of Judaism. Why? Because there's no such thing as a Jewish state. It's a rebellion against God. We are forbidden as Jews to have one inch of sovereignty. We are forbidden, even if the land would have been an uninhabited land, if Palestine would have been totally barren, desolate, not a person living there, and somebody would come along from the Jewish faith and say, we want to make a nationalism home, we as Jews would say this is forbidden. Why? Because if you look at the books of the prophets, Ezekiel, Isaiah, Jeremiah, since the destruction of the temple 2,000 years ago, we were expressly told by God in a prophecy from King Solomon that we are not, we were put under oath by God not to return en masse to the Holy Land in large numbers, not to rebel against any nations, and not to try to end exile. We are not to make one inch of our own sovereignty. And we accept that. Why? Because we know that the world belongs to God. It's his world. It's his land. And he says to us, accept it as a punishment, the destruction of the temple, and you are not to have your sovereignty. Because we were not on the level of holiness that was required. When the Jews left Egypt and they went into the Holy Land, it says in the verses in the Bible, look, it says there many times, it says God warned the Jews that the Canaanites, they had defiled the land. They were idol worshippers, and they defiled the land. And they thought that God, the land is rejecting them. It's a holy land. And God warned the Jews, be careful, do not defile the land, because you will be rejected as the Canaanites were rejected. When the Jews went, by the way, time was not allowed for this, but the Jews at first were reluctant to go in, and they were punished for that. They were in the wilderness for 40 years, if you read about that. And because there were some Jews who were reluctant to go into the Holy Land, it was God's command. They had to go in. They weren't out to fight. They weren't looking to take over the country. It was a command of God. They had to go in. Then after 40 years, Joshua the prophet took them in. And as you know, they went around the walls of Jericho, and the walls of Jericho sunk. It was a miracle. Everything is, the world is ruled by God. When they went in, God warned them, don't defile the land. The prophets warned us that we were not on this high level of purity, and therefore the temple was destroyed and we were sent out of the land. Then we were warned, don't attempt to recreate any type of kingdom. We are forbidden. What do Jewish people wait for? Jews wait, one day we believe that God will make a miracle. We hope it'll be today. That we will wake up and all the atheists, people that you know who laugh and scorn at us for believing in God, one day we're going to wake up and they're all going to believe in the one God. We believe that day will come, that God is going to make a miracle, a metaphysical change, where all the humanity is going to believe in one God. Then we believe, and that's what we pray for. We don't pray for a nationalism, we pray for the revelation of God, and we believe that day all the nations will come together, we will go up and serve, we will go up, and God will create a temple. That's our belief. We're not asking anybody to accept this. We're not standing with guns and saying, believers. We believe that that's what happened. There will be a miracle, and all humanity will go up, and God will create. It says the Jerusalem was destroyed in fire. Jerusalem will be recreated in fire by God. It will be a spiritual thing. That's the Jewish belief, Judaism 101. Any attempt prior to this miracle by God to go up and take the land is rebelling against God, and it's transgressing oaths. An oath of God, which is a very serious thing. There can't be anything more serious than God puts on the oath. Like you go to court and you swear to tell it. An oath is by us considered the most stringent thing. God puts on the oath. So to go there was never attempted. For 2,000 years, Jews have gone through the Crusades, have gone through the Inquisition, Spanish Inquisition. I don't know how many people know of the Spanish Inquisition. What they can go to Spain, you can see the torture chambers. What they did, they burned people at the stake. They had to renounce their being Jewish, and if not, they were burned. And Jews gave their lives constantly. There was a time that the Jews were very rich. They could have bought a piece of land. It was called the Golden Age of Judaism. And they could have easily bought a piece of land and built a home. But they didn't. Why didn't they build a land? Why didn't they buy a piece of land after so much suffering? Because it's clear in our teaching, the rabbis told them, if you look at Maimonides, all the teachings, they were told, have patience. God is compassionate. He does. If God was going to have a land, he'll give you a land. To go and buy a piece of land, you're rebelling against God. It's showing that you don't believe that God is ruling this world. So we never did it for 2,000 years. All of a sudden, around 100 odd years ago, Theodor Herzl, Zev Jabotinsky, a bunch of guys, if you look at the pictures of these Zionists who were sitting by the first Knesset, was called the gathering, the Zionist gathering in Switzerland, you'll see that almost nobody covers their head. They're all non-religious, almost entirely. Who are these people? And they decided that they're going to make a national home for Judaism, for the Jewish people. You think they did it because they had religious beliefs? They had anything to do with religion? Not on anybody's life, they didn't mean that. For instance, Theodor Herzl, who had a diary, he was the leader, the father of this Zionism. He had he wrote in his own diary, and I'm quoting from page 14. He said, a way to solve the problem of anti-Semitism, that people are against Jews, is to speak to the head priest of Vienna to get an appointment with the Pope to make a mass conversion of all the Jews of Austria to Catholicism. That's a solution that we should all, we've been giving our lives, being burnt at the stake to uphold God's commandments. And he says the way to solve anti-Semitism is that we should make a mass conversion. They should all become Catholics. It should be done on Sunday in the middle of the day with music and pride, publicly. We are the last generation that held on to the faith of our forefathers. The conversion should be in St. Stephen's Cathedral. It's the large cathedral there. In other words, he's talking on and on and on. He has no problem with dropping the religion. He was so much anti-religious that he had one son, his name was Hans, and he wrote in the newspapers that he did not circumcise his son. And everybody knows this is our covenant to show that we are subservient to God to do circumcision. He wrote proudly that he's not circumcising his son, and he never did to the day he died. He didn't circumcise his son. Jews, at the time the Greeks came in and took control around 2,000 years, over 2,000 years ago, in Palestine, there was a Greek rule. And they gave the decree that anybody circumcises their children, they'll be murdered. So people, till that day, Jews paid taxes for many years, maybe hundreds of years, they paid taxes to the Greeks, and they had no problem with that. When they said that, they put out this decree that if you circumcise your son and keep the Sabbath, you'll be killed. Then the five sons of the high priest in the temple, they were called the Maccabees. Maybe you heard the name Maccabees, because the Zionists used it for their Olympic team. So these people, they could have been probably, but they were old people, rabbis with white beards. They went up and they said, we're going to defy the Greeks. There was a lady, she circumcised her son, and she threw herself down off she went on top of a high wall, and she circumcised her son and threw herself down off the top. She knew she was going to be murdered. And she gave her life. And this is what Jews know, this is what we ought to do. We give our lives for their religion. And here, Theodor Herzl, his name should be obliterated, he never was was put under a position that he was threatened with his life, yet he said, I'm proudly not circumcising my son. This is a portrayal of what Zionism is all about. The Maccabees, these five sons of the high priest at that time, the Greeks went up and they fought against the whole Greek army, hundreds of thousands of soldiers. It's impossible physically to be victorious in such a case. Yet they were victorious. Why? Because we believe it was God's intervention. It was a miracle. The Maccabees were not physically possible to be able to be victorious. They were victorious. Why? Because they stood up to be loyal to the Almighty. Yet the Zionists, they come and they make an Olympic team and they call themselves Maccabees. They show, see, Maccabees, we are following, you know, I'll just tell you what the word Maccabee means. Maccabees stands for four words. It's the acronym. It's Mi Kamocha Be'elam Hashem. Who is like you amongst the strong ones, God? In other words, nobody's as strong as God. And they put this on, they wrote this on their shields that they carried. And they went up against hundreds of thousands of soldiers. And they were victorious, five people. Why? Because it was God's will. So the Zionists have the audacity to use this, what these holy people stood up against, the ones who tried to make them stop serving God, and they use that name for their Olympic team. As if they're following in the footsteps, they're few against many, they're David against Goliath, against the Arab nations. They use and abuse and misconstrue all the teachings of the Torah as if they represent Judaism. They represent the abomination of people who come from the Jewish religion. Again, they decided to sit down in Switzerland at the end of the 19th century. They're going to create a national home. These people who had detested God and the religion, yet they knew they're not going to gain. They saw, they discussed it. They were not stupid, unfortunately. They were, and they saw that they won't get support from the masses. And they needed you need a massive amount of support. How to build a country? You need massive amounts of money and support. And how are they going to get this? So they decided, look, they wanted to make the country in Uganda. Now, if it has to do with the Bible and the Torah, why did they want to go to Uganda? They wanted to make the country in Patagonia, Uganda. They didn't discuss with them. But they realized they won't get support, so they decided to go to Palestine. They detested religion, but they decided Palestine is a place. And then they started using the Star of David. They'll call themselves the State of Israel. Zion refers to Jerusalem. Zion, it says in the prophets. So all of a sudden, they put on this pious look, and they started speaking and waving the Bible and saying, oh, God gave us this land, it says in the Bible. And we're simply continuing with this gift of God to us. And the Arabs were there. The reason they don't like us, they don't want us, because they hate the Jews. So the whole thing is built on hypocrisy. But you may bother hypocrisy, but these people have rejected God. So they don't have the morals that the Torah tells us. They don't have more. If anything stands in their way of reaching their goal of having a national home, they're ready to sacrifice lives, everything that stands in their way. It doesn't matter. It could be Jewish lives, certainly the Palestinian lives that stands in their way. Why not? I say certainly. Unfortunately, I think they would want more the Jews who are God-fearing to die more than the Palestinians. And they express it that way constantly. I've heard it from their mouths. Because we are a bone in their throats. We stand in their way because we show the world and we tell to the world, oh no, these guys are Madoffs. These guys are phonies. They don't represent the Torah. We undermine the legitimacy. They hate us. If I have to speak at a university somewhere, they'll pull out all stops. They'll speak to the board that they should speak to them, that they should threaten the professors and this and that they should not let us speak. And when a Palestinian comes, usually it goes through. Because why? Because we undermine the legitimacy. We uncover to the world, we reveal to the world that everything that they're coming with, the psychological warfare, that this intimidation, that if you speak up for the Palestinians, you are anti-Semite, you hate the Jews, and that you are unjust, that we show that it's totally false, that they can't take that. But we want you to understand this, that Judaism is clearly contradictory to this whole concept of Zionism. We are forbidden to have our own inch of sovereignty, even if it would be uninhabited, the land. Being that the land was inhabited by a people, then they decided to go to Palestine in order to be able to get support from the evangelistic Christians who study the Bible and say, oh, the Jews have to be there. Let's not get into the reasons why many of them believe that the Jews have to be in Palestine, in the Holy Land. There's many issues about that. But many do it for humanitarian reasons, simply they believe in the Bible. And of course, the unaffiliated Jews, the non-religious Jews, millions of Jews around the world are non-religious, unfortunately, and they're ignorant of the Torah. So they say to them, hey, you know, look, you have the cake and eat it. You don't have to be religious, and you'll be, and God will be pleased with you because you are bringing the Jews back to the Holy Land, so you can sit there and eat pig and desecrate the Sabbath. You can do what you want, and God's going to love you. Just give money to JNF, Jewish National Fund, you know, to the Zionist funding. So they tell Jews around the world, all you have to do is support Zionism, and it's great. You know, you can buy off God. So what they have is they're telling people, support the Zionist system. That's why they went to Palestine, they created Zionism. But in truth, it is expressly forbidden, as I said, we were put under oath by God not to make our own state. And being that it was inhabited by a land, so now what is Judaism? Judaism means subservience to God. Judaism is the acceptance of the Torah on Mount Sinai. It means that we are accepting all God's rule. So when it says we're not allowed to have a state, we accept it. When it says in the Torah, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill, you're not allowed to harm another human being, and you have to emulate God, just as God is compassionate, you have to be compassionate, we accept that. So the concept of taking the land away from the Palestinian people, stealing their homes, it just compounds thousandfold this crime against God by having this thing. So now that because of their practical reasons, they decided to go to Palestine, every facet of the religion, they're desecrating, they're breaching. The concept between man and God of having the sovereignty, of having a Jewish sovereignty, that God expressly said, don't do it. And everything that the Torah says that you shouldn't do from you to your fellow human being, not to harm them. On the contrary, you should be compassionate, you should give tzedakah, you should give charity, you should do good. All of this is put on the side. Why? Because these people scorned God, scorned the Torah, and they wanted to make a state. All the rabbis, as I said, from day one, opposed this universally. Until today, you should know that the very religious Jewish communities, as I was showing today pictures, if you go to New York, where there's a very large Jewish community, you go to Manhattan, right across from Manhattan is a place called Williamsburg. It's the most religious Jewish, concentrated religious Jewish area. It's right across from Manhattan, so take the time to go visit it. It's right, you take the Williamsburg Bridge on the right across from Manhattan, you go up over the bridge on the right side is the most concentrated religious Jewish area. The women dress modestly, the men you see dress with beards and they're very religious, and these hundreds of thousands of Jews, they oppose the state of Israel. They're all religious and they all oppose the state of Israel. Not one Israeli flag. If you will go to Mea Shearim in Jerusalem, in Kutz, you will find that they oppose the state of Israel. That you'll find when you go to London, Stamford Hills, Stamford Hills is an interesting community. It's Muslims and Jews living together. There's a mosque and a synagogue. They're living together. There's almost not one Israeli flag, because the more the religious, the more they know their religion, they know that Zionism is forbidden. So they oppose the state of Israel. And people think that the more religious, the more Zionist you are. That's part of the tragedy. The more religious the Jew, the more he opposes the state of Israel. And we demonstrate. We go out, we have hundreds of thousands of Jews demonstrating in Palestine, in the U.S., in London. It doesn't get reported by the press because there's intimidation of the press. New York Times, Washington Post, any big paper, who's talking about the little, like the New York Post and all these others, they just ridicule us. They'll never write what's happening. When the Zionists make a demonstration of 50 people, they'll have them in the news, constantly. When we do whatever we do, it doesn't get reported. The press TV, since they're around, they report about us. Al Jazeera, when they come to New York, and we get reported by them. But if it wouldn't be for this, in fact, in Israel, they wanted to ridicule us or something, or they wanted to show how we're evil, not to ridicule, but how evil we are with the enemies, with Iran. So they showed that Iranian TV is showing we're making a demonstration. They didn't write, they didn't show the demonstration, they wrote, Iranian TV is showing the demonstration of Jews in Iran. And we're talking about tens of thousands of Jews. There would be hundreds and hundreds of thousands more if it wouldn't be the fact that when we demonstrate, we get brutally beaten. I was showing pictures, we have many pictures of Jews being brutally, brutally beaten every time in Palestine by the Zionists. You can look at our site, NKUSA, wherever you can go, you'll see the Jews are brutally beaten by the Zionists. And this is ongoing. I mention always that was probably the first famous martyr, the one who was assassinated, was not an Arab, was not a Muslim, it was a Jew. His name was Dr. Dahan. In 1924, he took the chief rabbi of Palestine, And he brought it together to the tramp, king of tramps, Jordan, which Rabbi Zonnenfeld, of blessed memory. This is a picture of him. Again, you can see it on his, on the side, Dr. Dahan. He brought together, he was a politician, he came from Denmark, he was a frequenting Jew. He thought to be a good Jew meant to become a Zionist. So he moved to Palestine, he joined the Zionists. He was a very serious person though. It didn't take him very long to realize that this is not what religion is all about, and that the religious community is against the Zionists. So he went to the chief rabbi of Palestine, to Rabbi Zonnenfeld, and he said, look, this is terrible. The world doesn't know what's going on. So this was 1924, he brought the chief rabbi of Palestine to the king of Transjordan, to visit Emir Abdullah in Transjordan. He brought a few others, and the Jews gave over a letter of loyalty and friendship and to the king of Transjordan. And then he said, look, this is not enough. I'm going to go to Parliament in England, and I'm going to tell them that the Jews are being falsely represented here. And he was a diplomat. He used to be in Denmark, but was very close to the king of Denmark. The Zionists, the Haganah, which was the terror group that, of course, they're idolized today, but they were a real terror group, terrorists, and they were the official, you know, Zionist army before the State of Israel. And they went and they warned him, we're going to assassinate you if you're not going to stop, because they were first friendly with him, so they felt that they'll at least tell him that he should stop. They went, and while he was coming out of the, it's called the Shaarei Tzedek Hospital, until today it's still there in Jerusalem, he was walking, he went to pray there, there was a prayer, they used to pray in the hospital there. He was walking out of synagogue one night and they shot him. They killed him in cold blood. It's in their records, they don't refute it, they're proud of it. We have the record, they write they're proud of it, but they killed him. It was 1924. And since then there's a sad history of Jews who oppose them, get brutally beaten. They don't use live ammunition on us today because there's too much, it would be a scandal. They use rubber truncheons with lead piping inside, and people die from it. You know, in other ways, they use other ways. People who are died, like show Rabbi Samet, and many people, or our leaders, I was mentioning Rabbi Blau, who was the head of Nature Karta. He went in for a hernia operation, a minor surgery, and they went, we didn't know what happened to him, they didn't hear from him, and then we found him in bed, they opened him up, he died from internal bleeding. He just died, he was a strong man, he went in for nothing, and go on. Somebody pierced away Rabbi Hirsch, who was in the, he was the representative of the Jews in the Palestinian Authority, Rabbi Moshe Hirsch. We have pictures of him. Again, you can see this all on our site together with, probably you can see later, you can see, he's sitting with, he met every month around with President Arafat at the time, as a representative. He was walking in the street in Jerusalem, they poured acid in his face. He was almost blind, one eye was almost blind for the rest of his life. And nobody talks about this. And this, other Jews see this, and they're afraid to speak up. You have in Seattle, Washington, if the Jews, the religious Jews, studied in schools in New York, which is invariably they come to New York to study to the, you know, to the better schools and rabbinical colleges, then they're anti-Zionist almost entirely. But the ones who are anti-Zionist, they don't speak up because they're intimidated. It's like a politician. A politician dares not speak up pro-Palestinian. Why? He's committing political suicide. That's unfortunately doesn't answer for them. They should be speaking up, and the rabbis should be speaking up. I'm not saying that it's proper what they're doing, but I'm not in their shoes. It's hard to stay, you know, to tell somebody, hey, die for, you know, a cause.
Thank you.
The fact of the matter is that people are very afraid. We have a person in Manchester, England. He's our main spokesperson. His name is Rabbi Cohen. You can see pictures of him in our writing. He's very vocal. He speaks up against Zionism. He was in Iran. We have together meetings with the Ayatollah Khamenei and with many with the president. Ahmadinejad, but every time I'm not with apolitical. We have nothing with politics. I'm not getting into which side, whatever you like, whatever you want. We're not political, but we just want the world to know that Zionism doesn't represent us and that we have no in any manner, any type of animosity or fight with the Muslim people. So we went to President Khatami, we went to President Ahmadinejad, and we still go to them. I don't have my pictures here, but you can see pictures. We went to Hamas, we're very close with the leadership over there, and we went to President Abbas. We have not, that doesn't say our opinions of what they're doing. We feel that Palestine has to be total of free Palestine over the whole land. But I'm just saying, we're not political involved in, we say Palestinian people have to pick their own rulers, their own leaders, and so forth. you know, I don't want to get into political, but when we went to these people, Rabbi Cohen of Manchester is very vocal. He's in his 70s, I believe, to the 120s, a very special man, a distinguished scholar. And since he's been outspoken against Zionism, he's been brutally attacked. They've shot live ammunition in England, in Manchester, in his house. He has bulletproof windows and iron grates over that, and the police put cameras around his house. And this is for years now, and they have never caught anybody yet. His tires are slashed. Now other people see this, and he's been physically beaten. People see this and they're afraid to speak up. Because they can't, they feel, look, I can't die, I can't give my life for something. So they figure, they rationalize, you know, they'll go to a Jewish community somewhere and they'll teach them to be God-fearing, and they hope that, you know, they'll grow up and they won't become Zionists. But that's why they're not outspoken. Only in the very few communities, the very religious communities, where we are insulated, like New York or Jerusalem or London, where there's a God-fearing, that's where you'll find people are more outspoken. Again, I'm not saying it's right, I'm just explaining why here you'll have in Seattle, Washington, I had relatives here years ago, and they're anti-Zionists, they're living in New York, and they were anti-Zionists when they're living here also, they were sent to school here, and they eventually moved to New York, and I could tell you that I was going on a plane when President Arafat was sick. I went to visit him in the hospital, we went to the hospital then, and a teenager came over to me in the plane. He said, I know who you are. And I was going with a few rabbis. He said, I know who you are. We were just at a demonstration in New York together with you. I didn't recognize this guy at all because I don't know, you know, all the people who come to demonstrations, you know, thousands and thousands of people. But he knew who I was. He said, I want to warn you. This is not New York. You're coming to France. Be very careful. The Zionists are very powerful over there. They have something called Beitar. They have different groups and everything. It's very scary. He said, be very careful. Don't be outspoken. I thanked him very much. He didn't know that. That's exactly why I was going there, to be outspoken. But he meant it very well, you know. And he was in France. He came from France. He came to study in New York. He was flying back. When he's in New York, he joined our demonstrations. When he was in France, he didn't dare open his mouth. And that is on the sad tale of what is happening. People are afraid to speak. Again, we're not condoning it. Everybody should be outspoken. But the intimidation, the fear amongst the Jewish people is great. There's another issue. The vast majority of the ones who are truly religious, they are anti-Zionists. The ones who are truly religious are anti-Zionists. But even the ones who are a little less, they're anti-Zionists. And the proof is, if you will see, in Palestine, in the state of Israel, the vast majority of religious Jews don't send their children to the army. And they're constantly in a fight between the left and the right. How come you're not sending your children to the army? How come we have to die for you? That's what they keep on asking them. You know, look at the religious. They're suckers. They're leeches on the land. They're eating up the land. We died for them. Why should we die for them? That's what they say, the left. And the religious said, who asked you to come and to make a stay? You know, but they don't fight. And the fact is, they don't have, even on the religious, most of them, there's not Israeli flags on the building. The ones who get funded from the state of Israel. They don't have, and they don't celebrate on the, if you look at the pictures in New York, where the Israelis have their Independence Day parade, you'll hardly see the religious over there. Why? Because the religious don't celebrate. They will, all the religious, almost entirely, they will celebrate with me at the dismantlement of the state. Of course, it should happen without any death and suffering, but that they would celebrate, they don't want it. Now, so what do the Zionists do? The Zionists and the state of Israel, how do they control so many Jews? They're very efficient, like I said. First of all, the vast majority of Jews who are not religious, they use this constant vilification of the Arabs, that they're anti-Semites, and that the Torah, you know, it's a Jewish land and it's the promise of God and so forth. In the religious communities, unfortunately, what they do is fear-mongering. They keep on telling the Jews, if you're going to let back those Arabs, they're going to murder you. First of all, they count on the fact that the European Jews don't know the Muslim communities. They don't know the Muslims. They don't know what they did for us, the Muslim communities. So they use this fear constantly. And more than that, there's many Jews who come. I've had Jews approach me and they say, look, we agree with you, there shouldn't be a state. But look, it's a catch-22 situation now. If over 60 odd years already that the Zionists are controlling, look what they did to the Arabs. If you're going to let them come back in, you're going to give back land, like you just saw, they brought them to give some land. They said, what's going to happen? They're going to immediately murder the Jews. How could you take on yourself the responsibility of the Jews that are going to die if they're going to come back? And you're right. It was taken against the law. It was wrong. It's a transgression. It's atrocity. But how could, what could you do now? Should all these Jews die? It's built on the successful propaganda of Zionists, that there's this hate of Muslims and Arabs to Jews. The fact of the matter is, again, I tell you from, I'm watching that conference, the fact of the matter is that I personally and my colleagues, we went many times to President Ahmadinejad, we went to the leaders of Hezbollah in Lebanon. We went to meet leaders of Hamas, where we brought medical aid and so forth. We met Ismail Haniyeh. We met these people, and they embraced us. We had public press conferences, and they said, we have nothing against Jews. We have no problem of living together with the Jews. We have a problem of the occupation, of being oppressed by the Zionists. It has nothing to do with the religious conflict. They said it. And I'm certain that if you would give them the opportunity and you would give them the freedom and you would apologize profusely for what the crimes done to them, and of course restitution and so forth, they're not out to wipe out the Jews. I mean, it bothers me to have to even say this, because I have to convince. But the fact is that this is the fact, they're not out to Jewish blood. And it's a pure Zionist propaganda that they want to kill the Jews, but it works. So unfortunately, again, I'm not trying to give right to what they're doing, but this is the mindset, the philosophy, this is the psychology of the Zionists, how they're able to ensnare so many people behind them. But thank God, we say, Alhamdulillah, Baruch Hashem, we say it by us. Thank God, there is large Jewish communities, I said, that are true to Judaism, and our hearts cry for the suffering of the Palestinian people. Our hearts cry for and we are frustrated, we are humiliated what is being done in our name. But we pray to God constantly, and we know everything is in the hands of God. By a true believer, you know that that success in the hands of God is not to be scorned. And we pray to God that He should bring, without any more suffering, an end to this this cancer, the state of Israel, this evil, this works of Satan, the entire state of Israel, that should be dismantled, and God will bring it. Why? It says in the Torah, if you will go against God, it will not be successful. Many years ago, when we have the writings again, the Kukar Asai, and KUSA, when they started celebrating the Independence Day, the chief rabbi of Palestine, his name is Rabbi Teitelbaum, a little over 30 years ago, he wrote a letter, it was spread out in the Jews. He said, why are you celebrating, to the ones who are celebrating? He said, this is a rebellion against God. And I still hear these tapes, how you hear him banging on the table when he's speaking. He's crying, said, who knows how much bloodshed and suffering. This was even before, this was right at the beginning, before they knew what's going to happen with the Arab people and everything. How much bloodshed, how much suffering. This is a rebellion against God, and how much bloodshed will come from this. And we see how much bloodshed, rivers and rivers of bloodshed came from this. So we have, thank God, there's religious Jews who oppose it. Our hearts cry. From day one, we feel the suffering of the Palestinians, and we believe there's a God. It says in the Torah again, as I say, that if you go against God, it will not be successful. When they made the Oslo Accords, when they're going to make a two-state solution, I'm finishing, they made a two-state solution. So I personally went to Washington then, when they had this famous Oslo. My colleagues went to Madrid. And we stood there. I stood with signs outside. And I said, look, we're not naysayers. We don't want that there should not be peace. Yes, we're very happy for every inch that's returned to the Palestinian people. We're very happy for it. But we just want you to know, we're not happy with the existence of the state of Israel. We're not only not happy, we oppose it. And we want you to know that as long as this state exists, we don't think there'll be true peace. Because the Torah says if you go against God, it will not be successful. This was way back at the Oslo Accord. From then till today, how much bloodshed, how much suffering, and what do you see from that two-state solution? You see, the state of Israel will end, because God says if you rebel against Him, it cannot have a true existence. The only question is, when will God bring an end to the state of Israel? I don't know, I'm not a prophet. I don't think, and we always have a saying, the ones who know don't say, you know, when you talk about the prophecy, unless God tells them to say. You know, we don't know when they will end, but we know that God is compassionate. We pray to Him to bring a speedy and peaceful dismantling of the state. At the same time, you must do, because you have to emulate God. You have to stand up. And just like in South Africa, as you know, the nations left, they were doing, in the United Nations, you know, a very distinguished organization, and in order to join the organization, after Hitler would want to join with the Nazis, they wouldn't have accepted him. Who was accepted? A member nation that was, you know, supposed to be a democratic and so forth and so on, or whatever, that's properly a nation. So one of the nations was South Africa, and they were practicing apartheid. And and they went on their merry way, and everybody did business with them in the United States and Great Britain and all the countries. What stopped this continuous, you know, recognition of South Africa? It was the grassroots. It was people like you, like me. They stood up and they said, this can't go on. They made the politicians uncomfortable. So eventually, it was successful in ending the apartheid. And people thought it will never end. But you see, you keep on doing. So we have to let the world hammer it in that this has nothing to do with religion. When you're looking at the people of Gaza, they are suffering. They're continually suffering. Every day that goes by, they are dying. They have not kidneys, dialysis machines. They don't have water. They don't have... If you would know the water system, what goes on there, it's polluted. The kids swimming over there by the Gaza, the water. It's polluted. Who knows what sicknesses they're getting? And on and on and on. I could tell you, this time doesn't allow it. I went to visit the Zaytun family, and maybe you've heard of in El Zaytun, this Samuri, what is it, family. It's a very famous family. Unfortunately, like 29 people were shot with one bomb when they went to. We went to visit them. I went to visit the children. They were in the hospital in Europe. But then we went to visit them. This is a year. I went to visit a year after they were the attack in Gaza. So the world spoke about this family, the Samumi family in Zaytun, El Zaytun. And everybody spoke about it. It was such a, almost 30 members of one family. And they were taken to a hospital in Brussels. I think I went to visit them. We embraced them, we spoke to them. So everybody talked about that. Yet a year later, I went to visit there where they were living, their town over there, Zaytun, and we have pictures of it. They're still living in tents. What does a tent mean? Not the type of tent that you buy here, a nice tent. A piece of string with plastic over it. They don't have water. It's hot in the summer, it's warm, and in the winter, it's freezing. This is people, and where is the human? And this is not some place, some deep in the Amazon. It's like people 2 minutes away from civilization. It's in civilization. And yet people see this, it goes on, and people are quiet. Human rights activists are quiet. Not all, but humanity is quiet. Why? Because they're being vilified. We have to let the world know that there's no justification whatsoever for the vilification of people of Gaza. God's going to end in 2-3 minutes. I give an example. If the Nazis would have taken over France, God forbid, and they would be, till today, they would be taken over France. There were the freedom fighters in France, as you know, and I'm not condoning violence, not at all. But let's say the freedom fighters would have been they blew up the tracks, they blew up, you know, things that they made it for the Nazis, and they were very successful, the underground, the freedom fighters in France. What?
Resistance.
The resistance movement, the French resistance. They saved many Jews, they were very, they gave their lives for what they were doing. And if God forbid, Nazis would have taken over France, and today they would still be the freedom fighters, the resistance movement. Now let's say the world would say, look, you can't keep on going on, it's already 60-odd years. You have to stop. And they would agree, they said, you know what, okay, we'll stop what we're doing, and we'll live with the fact the way it is. Give us a place that we can live, and we'll live with it. No. The world will say that, no, you have to get up and make an announcement that the Nazis are the rightful rulers of France. You would say that's crazy. That's unjust. That's deplorable. You know, what kind of, what words would you use for it? You know, how could you do such a thing? Or like a bully is punching a guy, he's punching the kid in the nose, and he says, now say thank you. He's not happy until the kid says thank you also. They said, so here, the people of Gaza, if you remember before the attack on Gaza, they said they made an agreement not to shoot any more missiles, nothing. And they said, that's not enough. You have to get up and make an announcement that the state of Israel is legitimate. And the world says, yeah, they're right. You see, these are the villains. They're stubborn. They bore upon themselves the whole attack because they don't want to recognize the state of Israel. They still have their keys. People are alive that still have the keys in Jerusalem. They have the keys to the home. They say, show me the legitimacy of the taking of our land. And we'll get up and we'll say, yes, it's legitimate. But there's no legitimacy. There's no logic to it. There's no legitimacy according to the Jewish teachings. The rabbinical authorities say it's not legitimate. What do you want? Why do we have to get up and say, yes, thank you for taking over our land? And because they don't want to do that, they're considered villains. So you have to stand up there and keep up until the world recognizes a distinct difference. This is not a religious conflict. This has nothing to do with religion. On the contrary, when we were under the Muslims, the Hitler Muslim countries. It came, and the Crusades, and so forth, the Inquisition came in Europe, didn't come in Muslim countries. This is not the problem, not religion, and you're not anti-Semitic if you stand up for the people of Palestine. Stand up and don't be intimidated. Pray to God, because ultimately it's in God's hands, but stand up and let the world know and say, we have to save these people. We have to give them everything they need, medical aid and so forth, but ultimately a free Gaza and a totally free Palestine, and then we will be all able to stand and embrace each other and serve God as we've had, and people realize that this is just a mirage. It's a bad dream that was. And people look back, and just like in the apartheid, or like in America, 70 years ago when you went to the South and the blacks had to sit in the back of the bus, and you tell your children, you know that the black people have to sit in the back of the bus, they will get crazy. It doesn't make sense. This is the same constitution that says one nation under God. It doesn't make sense. Yet this is exactly the way it was, and accepted by distinguished people. One day people will look back on the state of Israel that was, we hope that should be dismantled speedily and peacefully, and they'll say, it can't be, it doesn't make any sense. We're waiting for that day. We want to celebrate that day. Let us hope God should bring that to, we should be able to celebrate without any more suffering and death the end of the state of Israel, hopefully in a free Palestine, free Gaza. And ultimately, we always pray for the day when God's glory should be revealed throughout the world, that the whole world should recognize the one God, that we can serve Him together. For us Jews, that's of course our major dream. One of our dreams that we should be able to show our, with the freedom of Palestine, that we should be able to show our gratefulness to the Muslim, the Arab countries for the safe haven and the home they've given to us for so many years. But God's name is peace, shalom. Shalom. And God wants peace, that we should all be able to serve Him in peace and harmony soon and nowadays. Thank you. Questions. I have pictures here. This is a book that we put out, Building Bridges, when the President Ahmadinejad came to the U.S. and we presented him with this book. And we have a picture. We went to years ago, we went to a conference in Iran. And on the wall, there was a big sign from Ayatollah Khomeini, where it says, we have nothing against the Jewish people, against Christians. I'll show you this picture here. We have no animosity, you can read the Persian. We have no animosity against the Christian Jews and other stratus, I don't know, strata, something. And this is an ongoing, if anybody, the world should only know this, yet they're vilified. Majority of Jews are non-religious. It hurts to say, but that's a fact. They don't keep the Ten Commandments. They don't keep the Sabbath. And so the religious Jews who are true to the Torah who take with seriousness that the Torah says that we're not allowed to have a state is a minority, only the religious. Now, that said, there's many Jews who are non-religious who support human rights and support the Palestinians because of human rights. We don't come from that angle. We say, first of all, human rights is godliness. God says you have to be compassionate, not do evil. So when people call human rights, we call godliness. And we're coming from that angle because of religion. So not talking about the human rights activists from the non-religious, the majority of religious Jews, religious around, as I said, you find they don't celebrate the Zionists, you won't find them celebrating. There is, unfortunately, like I said, people who have been ensnared in Zionism because of the belief that the Arabs want to kill the Jews, unfortunately, but is from the religious, and that is a fact. If you come to the very religious community, come to where I live in suburbia of, it's the biggest Jewish suburb from New York, and maybe the largest suburb in the world of Jewish people, and you can count on ears how many Israeli flags there are on the whole, miles and miles. Because the Jewish community, religion, like I say, is totally contradictory to that, to what Zionism is. So the more religious, they automatically fall away from Zionism. Many students tell us that we have many people who oppose going to the state of Israel. We don't even go visit. There are many people who live there, anti-Zionists, and many people. But from my community, there's many people who don't go to the state of Israel because we don't want to give recognition to the Zionist state. There, you'll have to show my passport. We don't recognize that. So, but many people say, oh, you're making a mistake. Go there and that will strengthen your anti-Zionism. The many students who go there, they study in schools there, they say you go there and you develop such a hate for them because you see their immorality, their injustice, so they become even more hardened anti-Zionist because of that. I'm just saying. By the way, I didn't mention, it's just a very strong issue. There's no time for this. God help in the future, we'll give more time for this. But the Zionists use the concept of the Holocaust, as you know. They're very busy with the Holocaust. Now, my grandparents were killed in Auschwitz. My whole family, the vast majority of my family was killed in Auschwitz, as many, many other people in the United States from the religious communities and many other communities. We immigrated from Europe after the Second World War. My father escaped Hungary, went to Italy, from Italy came to the United States, got married here in the United States, and so forth. All our communities were like that. So we all knew what Hitler meant to us because it's in our blood. We grew up in a community where all our grandparents, we didn't see our relatives, uncles, aunts, and a lot of times I wouldn't know what, the family history was, this stuff. There's nobody to ask because they were murdered. I mean, I have some relatives that were, but, the majority were murdered by the Nazis. So nobody could tell us, we don't feel in our blood, Hitler. Yet the Zionists seem to have adopted it as if it's their thing. And they make these memorials. They mean one thing. They mean the support of the state of Israel by intimidating. In other words, if you don't support them, then you're a continuation of the Nazis. It's clear. That's what they talk about. Oh, you like the Nazis. They want to sort of fuse together the Palestinians with the Nazis. And how abhorrent that is, how disgusting that is, because we have writings, we have a book, I have here one book of that, just a cover of it, called The Holocaust, Victims Accused, how we show how the Zionists, they impeded the efforts to save Jews, and they collaborated with the Nazis also, the leadership, not all, there were some Zionists who gave their lives to save Jews. But the leadership tried to, I have just a statement. I'm not going to go on to the speech here, but I just want to give one, I'm going to quote Chaim Weizmann, the first president of the state of Israel I mentioned before. And I'm just going to mention one little statement of his. In 1938, when they were meeting together, the Zionists, because the leadership knew what the Nazis are doing, because they were very well informed. They had a meeting if they should help Jews leave Europe to escape to Palestine. And so they weren't talking about the Palestinians, the Arabs are going to stop them or not. Just the question was, should they help you? And this is Chaim Weizmann, the first president of the state of Israel. And he said like this, I'm quoting him, "Palestine cannot absorb the Jews of Europe. We want only the best of Jewish youth to come to us. We want only the educated to out and to Palestine for the purpose of increasing its culture. The other Jews will have to stay where they are and faith, whatever faith awaits them, these millions of Jews are dust on the wheels of history and they have to be blown away. We don't want them pouring into Palestine. We don't want Tel Aviv to become another old great ghetto. In other words, Jews like me are, you know, ghetto Jews. In other words, let them die. We don't want them in Palestine. These millions of Jews should die. We don't want them. And they tried, and they worked with the Nazis. This unbelievable story. We have the documents. There's books written about this. Go on and on and on. They Britain tried to save, in this book, The Holocaust Victims Accused, we have the documents that Britain in Parliament offered that they're going to take all the Jews into India without documentation. They're going to take them in, into India. And the Zionists said, oh, we are only agreeing to work if you include Palestine in the agreement, that they should take them to Palestine. They said, we can't do that. So they stopped, the Parliament stopped working on that angle, and the whole motion died. In other words, Jews had several times they could have been saved, but the Zionists didn't want. The Zionists wanted that Palestine should grow with Zionists. So when they should have the audacity to talk about the Holocaust, their hands are bloodied with the Jews, death in the Holocaust, yet they have the audacity to speak about, you know, like the Nazis, and they use the Holocaust when they should be hiding from shame of what happened by the Nazis. And there's much more facts to that.
Yeah, brothers and sisters, because the time is already, you know, close past the end, so I would request all of you to, we can take the same questions, inshallah, we'll address to the honorable guest on Sunday in another presentation. But I'll just take one question for tonight, and then we will end the program. So this is the question.
I went to school that Christians and Jews used to sit next to me. We never had any problem coexisting for thousands of years, that's a fact. My question is, could we come up with better ways to educate people about the difference between Jews, Judaism, and Zionism? Thanks.
Well, one of the issues that I've spoken here, I remember, and I constantly speak, is the fact that the Zionists didn't go to sleep over the issue. They're constantly making sure in the papers that people should always understand that they're the ones who are suffering. It's the Holocaust. They're never sleeping. They're constantly doing. They don't wake up one day and say, "Hey, we're attacked." They're constantly working on this. They vilify constantly, and they speak about, "Oh, you hate the Jews. You hate the Anti-Defamation League." Abram Foxman constantly looking for something. "Oh, they hate the Jews. They hate the..." We don't see, unfortunately, the history that I'm talking about. I meet old people, Muslim people, and old Jewish people, and I come over, and they come over to me. I went to Paterson, New Jersey, and this happens all the time. So an old man comes to me and says, "I gotta tell you a story. I lived in Jerusalem, and he was a very poor boy, and his parents were gonna send him to school. So his Jewish neighbor bought him his briefcase and his first set of khakis and said, you know, I quote, and he still remembers, and he went to school, he still remembers, an old guy, he was a teacher later in his year, and he said, you know, he still remembers that coexistence, and I could go on and on and on about, you know, this coexistence that they had. Another Rabbi Cohen who was here, in, I think I came, did I come with Rabbi Cohen, an older man? No?
That was a young man.
A young man. Oh, well, anyway, there was a Rabbi Cohen, an older man, not the same, Cohen is the name of the called priest, that's the one who served in the temple, so all the ones from Aaron, brother of Moses, their grandchildren are called, they're called Cohen, the family names, many of them, there's many Cohens. The Rabbi Cohen was, he was a person who lived, he's in his 70s, I think, he has great grandchildren, thank God, he's not such as well, he's not so healthy now. He tells a story about how his mother, this was before the state of Israel, he lived in the old city of Jerusalem, and it was already in the 20s and 30s, you know, there was already tension. It was very strong tension because the Zionists were active. And he said, yet an Arab boy came, and his mother was hanging out clothing to dry or something, and an Arab boy came and grabbed it. And this guy's father ran after him, and he said, "I'm going to kill you," he's telling his kid, you know, he said, "How dare you do this?" This was, you know, because the coexistence was so strong. So, the little Arab boy grabbed his Jewish lady's coat. I'll tell you another story, thing he told me. He said when, you know, at the beginning, in 1948, Jordan took over the old city of Jerusalem. When they took over the old city over there, I don't know, the whole, whatever, they took over by the Jewish quarters. So the Zionists told the Jews that they have, and they threatened they're going to kill them if not, that they have to stand up and fight. and the Jews, the head, Rabbi Ginsburg, I think his name was the head, they put their lives up, they could have been shot, and they didn't care, and they put up white flags that the Jordans should take it over. They didn't want to fight with the Arabs. And the Jordans took it over. What happened was the whole Jewish community was surrounded, was taken over by Jordans in the old city. And these people are alive today. You can hear these stories from them. What happened was a little child, I don't know, a boy, a girl, disappeared. And because of, you know, the turmoil, you know, they took over Jordan. And he said that for like a few weeks or a month, they were under Jordan's rule. And the Jordans gave them, respected them, they took care of them, they gave them food and, you know, water, everything they needed, they took care of them. Nobody was harmed in the Jewish community. And in fact, when this little kid disappeared, they found the kid, they brought it back to the parents, this child. And then afterwards, they unfortunately, he said, this is Rabbi Cohen, many say the same story, they said, they transferred us back over to the other side, you know, to the Israeli side, after like the, whatever, the negotiation, after a month or two. He said, would it that we should have not gone, that we should have not let ourselves be transferred? You know, we would have stayed under Jordan's rule in the old city, but unfortunately, that's what happened. But I'm just saying, now all these stories of coexistence, nobody knows. And if you want to write about it, the papers are not going to write it, because they're going to be anti-Semites if they write that. So they don't want to write any of these stories, only pro-Zionist stories, where you can show that an Arab killed a Jew or something, then that's a good story to write. But if you advertise, and in other words, if you spend money just to write anecdotes, stories as an advertisement, that the world should remember how we live as a communities in all the Arab countries and as individuals, and then you can say, why can't we continue living like this? Religion is not the impediment. Let people, it's people who hear, they don't know. They're, you know, they're ignorant of the history of what happened and everything, and the Zionists had the mic in their hands for 60 odd years, and everybody believes what they say. So it would help. That would help. I mean, I'm not, again, I'm not, you know, this prophet, and I'm not the, you know, a brilliant person, but I could just say that if people would know the facts and would understand what's going on, that they would change. There would be a change of opinion. So that we could try to do, you know? And again, do what you could. Don't be intimidated. Speak up. Educate people and